and welcome. I'm Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner.
And I'm Shay Pataja, the co-host of
New Retirement Radio,
the podcast.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice, and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
Thank you, Mr. Announcer Man. We are back for another edition of New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design. The gang is all in today, headed up by Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Ron. It is great to be here. Thank you to all of you who are listening on August 27th. We appreciate all of you for listening, for your input, for your questions, comments. It's really been a fun summer from that aspect. There are some fun things still going on. They're shock and awe, right, given our world today. Today we're talking about trusts as beneficiaries of IRAs. Should I name my trust, and or if my trust is named, should I maintain that beneficiary status, perhaps, as part of questions you might have for your attorney and or financial planner advisor? Why is this important? Because eventually we're going to pass away. And when that day occurs, who's going to get the money?
Or
and
have to
how
manage.
Will they get it? Or who will get to manage it? And what are the issues that they might face? And Heidi, as a part of this, is by the way, good morning, Heidi Thompson.
Good morning, Dennis. Today.
Excellent. We have two other people with me here before he goes driving along with the, you know, the content. Heidi Thompson joins us, managing executive of the office as well as a financial representative.
That's right.
Sitting here. Fantastic. Thank you. And Shay Pataja, our chief experience officer. Yes. Whom I've heard, as I mentioned, about five times with her advertisement here recently on WTCM. Very popular indeed. I've heard it is the most, in terms of ads, the most popular ad on WTCM AM at the current time. You know, yes. What are you going to do?
Thanks. We have trophies and the.
There you go.
You guys have really put the pressure on for the next ad.
That's right. There you are. Mm-hmm. So stop naming IRAs as beneficiaries.
What?
Is the headline of this article. Now, we are not giving financial,
legal.
See, what do attorneys give? Legal advice. That's it. Thank you. Legal advice here on the radio show. We don't purport to be attorneys, full disclosure. However, this is an article written by an IRA analyst with Ed Slott & Company as of the relatively recent date of August 10th of 2020. He says, Andy Ives from Ed Slott & Company, yes, trusts can play an instrumental role in estate planning. Well, they can for many of our clients as well. Yes, special needs trusts are invaluable to those with disabled or chronically ill family members. Trusts are essential for minors and for those who may struggle with managing money. Trusts also allow for post-death control of assets, but they are not for everyone. Remember, it's not for you. Okay, that reminds me of something. Never mind. Nor are they a panacea when it comes to estate planning, especially with IRAs. Why? He says, I continue to pound my head on the desk every time I encounter a trust unnecessarily named as an IRA beneficiary. Why did the IRA account owner name the trust? Bad advice? Was he or she simply trying to keep up with the Joneses who bragged about their trust? Did he read someplace that all trusts are great? Was he intentionally trying to make things difficult for his IRA beneficiaries? Sadly, making things difficult is oftentimes the unintended result. Difficult, yes, and much more complex. And difficulty sometimes costs money. So we're going to talk further into the program about duties of IRA trustees and or regular estate planning trust trustees as well after mom and dad pass away. What are those responsibilities? What do they need to know in terms of this? And what should you possibly be discussing with your financial advisors and or attorneys as well as a part of this? There is no tax benefit that can be gained with a trust that cannot be earned by naming a person directly as an IRA beneficiary. So naming those children, grandchildren, nieces, nephews, in many cases, is the better option in these kinds of accounts. These qualified, tax-qualified accounts that are going to have to be emptied with the new law at the passing of both spouses, if indeed it is a marriage, in 10 years after the fact anyway. That's part of the problem with the new law, new tax laws.
The Secure Act.
The Secure Act. Mm-hmm. 10 years, it's got to be out of there. So part of the thinking in terms of controlling that distribution, is that control really that meaningful to you, is a proper first question. If your goals are to streamline the process and ease the trouble of claiming the IRA by your beneficiaries, then do not name a trust. It is not a streamlining process. And lastly, he says, trust administration requirements are daunting. If a family member with little or no trust experience is named trustee, then expect problems. He says, I have over two decades in the financial services industry, and I want nothing to do with being trustee of a trust. No thanks. Leave that to the corporate trustee, which we do have corporate trustees that you can name. They are the professionals. If you've just named the intended beneficiary directly, there'll be additional steps and fees involved. But if you just named the intended beneficiary directly, none of that would be the case in many cases, in most cases.
So if I have a trust, should I name that my beneficiary of my IRA? No, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
Thank you, Ron, for listening. I'm so glad that you joined us here today. Now, what was your question again?
No, I was just because you were pretty emphatic about that's not a good. Is that for all people you're saying, or just
no,
generally?
Because at the beginning of this article, he says.
He says, assuming we are not talking about minors or those with special needs.
Okay.
And assuming the original IRA owner is not looking to control post-death distributions, items to consider, and that's the bullet points Dennis just went through.
Right.
And then he ends it with, I may get some heat from those who think a trust as IRA beneficiary is the right solution every time, but experience tells me otherwise. Desk bruises on my forehead.
I don't want this guy getting hurt. Banging his head on the desk.
He's pretty passionate.
Well, one major reason to have is a special needs trust, which he mentions, are invaluable to those with disabled or chronically ill family members. So that's why it's important to have a discussion again with your financial people. Do I want to name this IRA? I just had a conversation 2 days ago with a client whose children are minors. And in that case, it made sense to name the trust as a contingent beneficiary so that the children that don't have to go through probate in getting this distributed to them until they're age 18.
And Dennis, you know, that brings up something else that we've used at the office, that if you do name a trust, you can still name individuals maybe as contingents. And then that at least gives you some strategic moves you can make, where if it's not in the best interest for the trust to receive those funds, the trust can disclaim and say, we don't want to inherit, and then it can pass to those contingents. So even if you name a trust, there could be a strategic advantage to adding individuals as contingents and vice versa.
That's why you want to have these more complex conversations with someone who's sitting with you in an office. As you get more complex, generally with accounts in the range of $500,000 plus, you're going to see these kinds of conversations because all of a sudden the tax implications get more onerous. We have more issues as related to that. The tax planning becomes more important because the trust tax rates go to 37% after income of $12,950. Well, you don't get to the 37% bracket as married filing jointly, Ron, until you have over $622,000 of taxable income. So the difference between $13,000 and $622,000, let's see, what is that, about 50 times the amount?
Oh,
so it just shows you the taxes on trust are not fun and important to remember.
So Heidi's going to go over the responsibilities.
Let's hit that before the break, because that is key as well. What when all this goes down, what are the responsibilities of the trustee after the fact? Maybe this can help as well shed some light.
Sure, I can go over some of those.
You bet.
When the grantor, the person who funds the trust, passes away, then the trustee, whoever's named as trustee, has responsibilities in that role. They need to contact the attorney and to review the trust and the processes that are named in the trust. They want to keep the beneficiaries of the trust informed as to what's going on. They need to put together that team of advisors. And this is a point, Dennis, where you and I get involved sometimes, where the trustee will come looking for advice on how to invest the funds. You also may need a CPA to help you with those trust tax rules that we just alluded to. The trustee also needs to inventory the assets and determine the current value of those assets. They need to make partial distributions if needed to pay the expenses of the trust or maintaining the assets of the trust. They need to collect benefits, keep records, file tax returns, pay bills, and do the final accounting. They also are responsible when it comes time to distribute the assets to the beneficiaries and make sure it's done according to the trust document. So you can see there's a lot that goes into that role, and it can be overwhelming. And when you bring together a team to help you out, that can relieve some of that stress and that responsibility that you're taking on as a trustee.
Given that responsibility, if you're concerned about having one child when you have three, taking care of all these responsibilities and possibly that affecting the relationship between those three children, that's another great reason to consider naming a corporate trustee who would help them settle it and in essence perform all these duties and tasks as required under the law.
But when you do an IRA beneficiary, it's one individual. But what if, I should know this. I feel like I've been listening all these years.
All right.
What if you want to take, split your remaining proceeds into thirds, give a third to Hillsdale College, a third to your son, and a third to your daughter as equal beneficiaries?
Sure.
Do you need a trust to do that?
No.
No.
And that is so cool, because the best beneficiary after generally the spouse, and I'll say generally, but is a charity, because that money then is never taxed. So let's just say, as an easy example, there's $300,000 in this IRA that you pass on. Let's assume that both you and the lovely Laura both passed away. So $100,000 then goes direct to Hillsdale, and it's never been taxed. The perfect money to give to them, because you never paid tax when the money went in. You haven't distributed it and paid the tax on it. And it goes to Hillsdale tax-free. That is so efficient in terms of passing funds.
But the other...
Isn't that awesome?
Other $200,000.
And what's interesting, let's just say... Now, Heidi had mentioned this in the first part of the conversation. Let's just say that Laura said... You know what?
Hurricane Laura this week, by the way.
Her name has been
we
put
don't
into
know
the
your
storm
problem.
Status. Are we feeling stormy today, dear? Well, yes. So let's just say Laura wanted to say, you know, I'm going to disclaim this $100,000 because I know how important it was for Ron, in Ron's mind, that this money go to Hillsdale, and I want to see it go now. Because, Ron, I'm going to live another 20 years. Let's say she says that. She could disclaim that third, and it would go direct to Hillsdale. Now, isn't that amazing how powerful these can be? All of a sudden, if she feels that she's comfortable enough financially and she'd like that to happen, she can file a qualified disclaimer in most IRAs. And we've done this several times last year and experienced it directly with clients. And is it ever powerful? So she could theoretically say, just claim $100,000. Now, what if she wasn't quite comfortable with $100,000, Heidi? Could she say, I want to just disclaim $50,000 of it?
Yes, she could.
She could.
Any amount.
Just like that. So you see the beauty. I'm sorry. I'm preaching here. But the power of her being able to say this. And, you know, if you both pass away in a car accident on Dead Man's Curve, that $100,000 goes direct to Hillsdale anyway. But these things, as you begin planning, it's not rocket science, but what a huge difference they can make if they're made aware of these options that they can have in these accounts.
But how do you split that up three ways then? Is that all through the beneficiary claim?
Beneficiary, you simply name each of those people or entities as one-third beneficiaries of the IRA.
Okay.
33% to this, 34% and so on and so forth.
And Dennis, we could also say that when you're doing your plan or you're thinking through how and who you want to receive any assets when you pass on, you can choose too. You can say, hey, I know I want to give this amount to Hillsdale, so I'm going to take that money from my IRA and give it because they won't pay tax on it. But I also want to give this money to my wife or my children, so I'm going to pick this other account that maybe isn't an IRA that has less severe tax consequences. So it's not that you have to leave it to charity. You can choose which asset you leave to which entity, and it does have an impact on the taxes for the beneficiary themselves, correct?
For us personally, Jill and I have named on the contingent beneficiaries of all retirement accounts to charity, 100%. And I think we've mentioned that here before. The life insurance proceeds go to the children generally, as long as they're kind to us, right?
Right.
But what's interesting is that life insurance money is tax-free to them, where the IRA monies they have to withdraw over a 10-year period. So the tax implications can be incredible. And all that money going to charity, it avoids, well, what did Warren Buffett do? The man who's basically doubled the rate of return of the S&P 500 since he started, 20% versus 10% on the S&P as an average, approximately. He's not done too badly. But it's interesting, a significant, I think 99% of his estate, $70 trillion or whatever it is with a stock market these days, is going to charity. So why advantage of the significant tax savings? And what is his estate saving in real tax? Let's just round up a bit. It's about half of his estate is not then paying estate tax. So his estate will save approximately $35
billion. $35
billion. $1 billion in estate tax. So these numbers really, all of a sudden, they make a difference, don't they? And you can move so far beyond yourself in terms of exponential power in thinking through these things. Is this fun? No. This takes work sometimes.
It is for you, which is why people should work with you.
Yeah, well, we have clients come in. You know, it's not all fun and games. I get that. But the power that you can experience and the people and situations that you can influence, it's amazing for a lifetime. That's why, part of the reason we have this radio show, we sincerely hope that you are gaining from this, that you are gaining, that you're improving your own lives from the fact that we're having this radio show. That's a part of it, okay?
Denny from Manton is on the line for Prout Financial Design. Good morning, Denny.
Good morning.
Yes,
good
sir.
Good morning, Denny.
What's up, Denny?
Well, I was listening to you guys with interest, and I just wondered, is it difficult to dissolve a trust?
Is the trust written by you?
No, it was attorney group.
I should say, are you the trustee of that trust and written for your estate?
Yes.
Okay. And if I may ask on the radio, why are you wanting to dissolve it?
Well, it's pretty old, 20, 30 years ago.
Okay.
And, you know, times and situations have changed, so I don't really think I need it anymore. I just soon just go with, like, you know, conventional wills and so forth.
Yes. In general, you can do away with a trust by not naming the trust as the owner or beneficiary of any of the assets, and then it will not control those assets. You just want to make certain that you have done that in terms of beneficiaries on all the accounts and as well as ownership. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can that be addressed in the will then?
The will's not going to address that specifically, that the trust no longer exists in most situations. You don't have to name it as the owner of those assets to keep it out of the estate. If you don't want the trust to control, then don't name it the owner or beneficiary of those particular accounts. Now, I would recommend that you get all of these documents updated with your attorney if they've been that out of date, and especially regards durable powers of attorney for the finance as well as the health care issues. Make certain that those are updated, because you certainly most likely will use those documents first, your powers of attorney. So I would visit this.
In fact, I should actually go to attorney.
Yes, I would recommend that you do that. And then you can make certain, you can go back and forth on why do you want to get rid of this. And in many cases, they will agree with you that it makes sense to get rid of it. And it's done through the attorney as well, okay?
I certainly appreciate your input.
You're welcome, Denny. Good luck with that.
All right.
Denny from Manton, thanks for the call. Somebody also wanted to know if you would repeat the info of the author or the book that you've been quoting, or what
the article.
The article came from Ed Slott and Company.
Uh-huh.
The gentleman's name is Andy Ives, CFP. He's an IRA analyst. This article was written on Monday, August 10th of 2020. And if you simply call our office, we're happy to get you a copy of this. We can... this is our own direct access to IRAhelp.com, okay. Ed Slott and Company, this particular article. So, yes, if you'd like that copy, just call our office. The phone number there is 231-947-3992. Ask for Meg or for Deanne. Either one of them can either email this, or you can drop by and pick it up. Okay?
Dennis Prout. As you've mentioned several times, the market in March was about 29,000 something, the Dow Jones Industrial.
Mm-hmm.
It dropped down to what, 18 something?
18.5. Went from 29.5 on about February 10th or so to about 18.5 on March 23rd.
We're at 28,597 right now. It's up 264 today. The market's been on the great run, the three indexes that we follow, for 2 weeks at least.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain?
Well, have you been watching the Republican National Convention, Ron?
I was wondering if that had, do you think that really had any impact?
Well,
no.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing. Cause
it's been going on before that.
Well, the market is made up of people, yes. Obviously. They look to the future, not to the past. I'm not discounting what's happening in some of these cities, Portland, Kenosha, all the rest. But the market is not looking as much at that as it's looking at all the components of driving stocks higher in terms of value. What are those? Interest rates. What are the competitive interest rates that we're looking at out there? They're basically almost at zero. So if you can get a dividend from a stock, it's worth a relatively good sum still at 1.5 to 2% rather. So that dividend always makes a difference. And what is the value of these companies? Technology is playing a huge role in this. Technology in the future looks incredible. They look at the general business environment as well. Our tax is relatively low. Given how low interest rates, our costs are very low for borrowing money. All those components that you know intuitively, Ron.
How about like the COVID numbers, which I have stopped really tracking seriously, but mm-hmm. it seems to have leveled off. Do you think that's giving them a little hope and confidence?
It is a COVID-driven stock market because the rate of increase continues to decline. The real numbers are declining. If you look at the graph, it's dynamic. And so those numbers are coming down.
And there's all kinds of news about therapeutic drugs, vaccines, treatments. Just about once a week you hear something.
The Republican platform, one of their goals, the top 50, is to get a vaccine out before the end of this year. So that is having a role as well. There are six companies that are in final stages, approximately, of developing a vaccine. And the ability to get those vaccines into market and or into use is going to be relatively fast.
When the goals you mentioned there, the few that I remember for anybody that's been following is 10 million new jobs in a new Trump administration.
I saw that this morning.
And 1 million jobs reclaimed from China, manufacturing jobs. Those are among the goals laid out.
Yes.
And the vaccine. Mm-hmm. Do you think that drives the market at all, or some of the?
Absolutely. So this tends to drive the market. If they believe that I try not to get involved too much in politics, but everyone else is insisting on it. So if you look at the general business environment out there, it's still quite positive under the current administration. And if they win, that is generally considered positive for the stock market.
It seems like the people on Wall Street are, I think it's apolitical. They just really, it's about money. It's about driving the markets. And no matter what party's in power or proposals, they react to it.
Yes.
They react and plan, but
they're looking at the numbers.
Seem to be political.
Yeah, they're looking at those five things: COVID, low interest rates, general business environment, what's the tax brackets, what are the tax costs for companies as well as people out there. And then what's the regulatory environment as well? Continues to get less strict, fewer and fewer costs as it relates to that. So they're definitely looking from the 30,000-foot view. It's not down in some of these cities, urban areas, where we're having all these issues much. Now, if that becomes more of a significant conflagration, then obviously we have problems. But as of this point, it's still relatively under control.
Fascinating. Right.
It is amazing to watch. We looked at, Shay and Heidi and myself, we're looking at the actual activity of the stock market this morning. It is an amazing V formation. That recovery from the waterfall effect of the stock market coming down was that market because of all of this money being floated into our economy. This largesse by the central banks, and just because you brought it up, the liquidity strains and the severe downturn in the stock markets that followed early this year before mid-March have been buried for the moment in a tsunami of central bank money. A tsunami. So the word of the day.
Tsunami. And they're still thinking about a stimulus plan, maybe in a few months more money. But
yes. Maybe. And we've talked about the clapback, if you will, that's going to cause in our currency. It's already having its impact, as denoted by Bank of America, in terms of gold, silver, those kinds of assets that tend to be protectors of the currency.
You guys have a really interesting article about the 15 things. We will not get through them by the end of this.
No, we've got enough notes and stuff here for 2 hours.
Seriously.
2 hours.
But the 15 things that every
IRA trustee must know the answers to these 15 questions. Number one, does the trustee know how to set up and title an inherited IRA left to a trust? What we help clients with. The assets must be transferred as a trustee-to-trustee transfer. The decedent's name must remain in the account, but the inherited IRA will be under the federal tax ID number of the trust. So that may be one of the first things you have to do is get the trust registered and get an ID number for the trust.
Did you say you work as a trustee sometime?
No, said that we work with those clients who have trusts and are getting this work done.
We can help them title that inherited IRA correctly.
Correct. Does the trustee know how, in the next part of this, and when to get a trust tax ID number?
Uh-huh.
Three, does the trustee know what to do if the trust includes property other than an IRA? How are we going to handle this? How is it dispersed? Are we going to put it up for sale? You have the authority there, but you also have to act as fiduciary over those assets and make certain that your reporting is good. That's why you want, in many cases, other advisors involved in the control and disbursement of these assets through the trust, because the trust dictates this. Does the trustee know what to do when the trust includes bequests made to others who are not to receive IRA funds? Those have to be distributed by September 30th of the year after the date of death. Those got to be distributed out of that account. All right. Five, does the trustee know about the September 30th beneficiary designation date, the period from the date of IRA owner's death to September 30th of the year following the year of the IRA owner's death? Is known as the post-death gap or shakeout period. This is just a few of the notes as it relates to the importance and the key components of what the IRA trustee must do when they're a trustee of that trust, and in most cases when mom and dad have both passed away. What are my duties? How do I exercise them? Who should I contact? How do I get in touch with those people? And what would I want to do or know about these accounts? And what's interesting, oftentimes this can be very difficult because you have all the other emotions related to the passing of those same parents.
It really makes you second guess whether or not it's a good idea to have, you know, usually it's the eldest is put in charge of so many things. And that used to be, you know, the standard answer. Mm-hmm. But over the years, it's changed. It's like, do you want to preserve the relationship between the siblings once you're gone?
That may be a key reason not to name your children as trustees of the trust.
And that's
and
the why
to a corporate trust environment. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It can take up a lot of time and effort. And sometimes, you know, we get a lot of people in who will come in and just feeling that pressure. So.
Yeah, we get many times very negative comments about the amount of time and effort that it takes from these trustees in administering these accounts and getting everything set. You know, insurance policies here and there and everywhere, annuity accounts, you know, that these individuals have purchased over, in some cases, decades. They take quite some time and effort to get solved and settled out. So
isn't
that is
it on
a part
average,
of the process.
Like 3 years. On average, they say it's 3 years for complicated estates to finally iron out all of the detail. I read that. I'll find the source. I'm the Shea Stats girl. But
I don't know that time frame specifically, but that would not surprise me when it gets complex. Because you've got businesses. That's why, you know, all those other assets, the assets that you tend to be extremely comfortable with. Oh, yes, I got that account over there and here, and I got that 401k there. You see the importance of, well, they're not up to speed on that, and they don't know generally the rules and regulations that you do. Many parents don't understand how limited, in many cases, their own children's financial knowledge and awareness is. They think that their children know much more
than what
and,
they do.
That great interview that Tom Brokaw,
right.
It was an interview, he had with his daughter. He said, well, she knows that I've created a living will. And she said, I have no idea.
It's like recorded. She said, I'm lost, actually, Dad.
Yeah, you surprised me totally. So your children actually know a lot less than what you think you may have communicated.
Which is why it might be a really good idea in the next couple weeks. The invites will be going out. The website links will be ready to go. And you can register for a Retirement Planning Today class. It's all going to be online, so you can stay home. You can get yourself a bottle of wine, some cheese and crackers, and enjoy Retirement Planning Today from the comfort of your own home. And you and your spouse can listen. Your kids can listen in. It's online. So no limit to who can attend in your family. Tickets are, geez, oh, Pete's. Can you tell I do events on the side? Mm-hmm. The class is $39, and we email you the workbook, so you're going to have that in your possession. It's a great way to get everyone on the same page and start learning the same things. Dennis and Heidi are going to be teaching it. Dennis, you've been teaching that since I started with you, which was in 2006 you started teaching that class. So it's updated every year, and we're excited to be able to offer that.
I love doing it. It's completely educational, totally non-sales, and you will be appreciative, and almost a promise, 100% promise.
Thanks so much for listening. You can find us online at proutfinancialdesign.com. That's P-R-O-U-T, financialdesign.com. Also, you'll be able to find us on iTunes and SoundCloud.